Good morning. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. In the 1990s, sociologist Patricia Fernandez-Kelly was a research scientist at the Johns Hopkins Institute for Policy Studies when her research into what effects deindustrialization was having on city residents took her into West Baltimore. She immersed herself in the lives of several families, working to understand their experience and, in particular, the relation between them and government. The result is the book Fernandez-Kelly published this spring, The Hero's Fight, African Americans in West Baltimore and the Shadow of the State. Patricia Fernandez-Kelly joins us on the line from Princeton University, where she's now a senior lecturer in sociology. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
You paint a picture of a very warped relationship between government agencies, local, state, and federal, and poor people. You basically say government workers view the poor, who in the city are overwhelmingly black, as burdens, not people.
I would not want to cast any aspersions on the very dedicated, overworked, and underpaid public officials who interact with impoverished individuals and families. It is the institutions that I focus on in this book. These institutions, I call them liminal institutions because they stand in this kind of twilight zone in which procedures and guidelines make it possible for people to not be treated as citizens or consumers, but rather as potential burdens on the society. So in fact, social workers, teachers, police officers, all kinds of public servants on a daily basis have to try very hard in order to treat people as human beings because the actual procedures embedded in those institutions make it very difficult for them and certainly very difficult for impoverished individuals and families who tend to be constantly addressed as if they were potentially felons. So the emphasis of these institutions is mostly on containment, on punishment. The poor in this country, and I'm not the first one to say this, are treated very differently from the way you and I are treated. We are treated as consumers, as citizens. We are not required in most cases to demonstrate our deservedness in order to receive some of the benefits that we feel we are entitled from the society as represented by the state.
One of the people you introduce us to from West Baltimore is a man you call Big Floyd. Fairly young, he has several children early with his very young girlfriend, and you describe his, quote, blundering attempts at independence, close quote. Tell us about Big Floyd.
So Big Floyd is a very important personage because he reflects the experience of many impoverished men. He grew up in Baltimore at a time in which the city had gone from being a significant industrial center to an area completely depleted from resources. In the early 70s, Bethlehem Steel was the largest employer of people in the city. By the time Big Floyd was born, Bethlehem Steel was only hiring fewer than 8,000 people from the many thousands, close to 30,000 that it had employed in previous decades. And as a result, he was, like many other impoverished black men in the city, he faced great difficulty in attempts at finding jobs. In addition, he was attending schools that are underfunded and not able to provide adequate education. As with many other people who are poor, he turned to the idea of family and had three children with his young girlfriend, who herself faced tremendous burdens. What was so impressive about Big Floyd is that he kept on trying to be a father. And although his children had been taken away by Child Protective Services and allocated to different members of family and foster care. His dream was to get them together, and he kept on trying to find a job. And eventually he did find a job as a security guard. And lo and behold, when he entered a police station in order to get clearance, knowing that he had a clear and unburdened record, he didn't smoke, he didn't do drugs, he had not been in trouble with the law. But right there, he was arrested and taken to jail because he had failed to make a court appearance on behalf of one of his children concerning child support. This is a very good illustration of a problem that I discuss in the book, and that is the excessively punitive measures towards men who are very vulnerable and who are in their own way trying to put together the funds to support their children, but who are penalized heavily when they do not succeed.
Do you especially object to using police and courts and jails to enforce child support?
I don't think that using the police in order to enforce child support payments is the best of ideas. Community-founded strategies in experimental situations have been much more effective. But the presumption is that somehow all fathers are trying to escape fatherly responsibilities, and that's not what I saw in West Baltimore. What I saw in West Baltimore was a lot of men who would have loved to have the resources to pay child support payments and who could not find the jobs or the means in order to fulfill those dreams.
That's Patricia Fernandez-Kelly, senior lecturer in sociology at Princeton University here on Maryland Morning, WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her book, The Hero's Fight, African Americans in West Baltimore and the Shadow of the State. I don't think there's any agency in the book that comes in for as sharp criticism from you as Child Protective Services. You say it tends to undercut what meager authority parents in the inner city have over their children. Explain that.
This is a problem that most of us would prefer not to even face, because it is true that children experience tremendous levels of abuse and cruelty at the hands of adults, whether parents or strangers. And I think that we all agree that children must be protected. The question is whether the institutions, as they currently exist under the name of Child Protective Services, are fulfilling that mandate in any effective way. And my sense from a communication with the families, and remember, I knew these families, 50 families, 165 different individuals with whom I interacted deeply. And what I saw while doing my research is that most of the people that were disciplined by Child Protective Services had committed comparatively small transgressions. They had slapped their children around, they had spanked them, they had thrown them against the wall when they were not obedient. And as a result, they had to face public officials, go to court, and then their names were included in rosters of alleged child abusers for long periods of time. This was information that the children themselves, especially in their teenage years, took seriously because, and this is another thing that we don't do very well, we do not understand that children are social agents and that they will use the information and the resources available to them in order to negotiate and gain some power vis-a-vis parents. So most children do not lie about child abuse, that is true. But some children do, and the children most likely to use Child Protective Services in order to get power over their parents are children in their teenage years who know that their parents will be investigated and that their power over them, as little as it is, will be checked. So here I'm not demonizing children. I'm saying children are using information and resources in order to do what children do. middle class children use other resources in the same way, and that is to gain a bit of autonomy, a little bit of power and negotiation capacity vis-a-vis their parents. I also notice that such institutions are not terribly effective in curtailing truly egregious forms of abuse. So my push is not for the elimination of protective strategies, but for rethinking how we try to implement policies. The presumption that parents are abusing their children in adversarial ways could be rethought, and we could have, again, community-based and better informed practices that would allow parents to participate in better parenting strategies. These practices, as they exist today, have a disproportionate effect upon impoverished people. The vast majority of names included in rosters of child abusers at the national level are African Americans and Latinos. Of very, very meager means. And so we have an effect of class, we have an effect of race. We can do much better.
Have you stayed in touch with the families that you got to know in the 90s in West Baltimore?
Not all of them, but several of them, about 20 different individuals. Let me also add that several of the people who I met as babies or very young individuals in the 1990s are now dead. And they're either dead as a result of the pressures of diabetes and other related issues. Right now I can count at least five of the young people who I met and had a deep interaction with who have died violent deaths, one of them only last summer.
And they're facing, the next generation is facing the same problems that you saw in the
90s? Yes, I can guarantee that the very same cycle of despair and difficulty, the same barriers, will continue to exist unless we decide to do something. And these are the major issues. Residential segregation, when you have areas like West Baltimore, where poverty rates are very high, unemployment rates are very high, and where everybody is black and interacting constantly with liminal institutions that treat them as if they were burdens on the society, very little will be changed. And so, yes, sadly, I expect that the same cycle will be reproduced in the future because we continue to take a piecemeal approach. We are trying to teach the poor to dress for success or to behave better. But we do not do anything about context. We don't know anything about the spaces in which there are no resources, which spaces that are very vulnerable to the drug trade, spaces that are populated by public officials who are underpaid and poorly trained and who react violently towards the violence of young people involved in drug trade and other mischief, etc. So we may actually spend millions of dollars trying to fix the behavior of poor people, but until we fix the spaces in which people live, there will be very little change.
Thank you for talking to us.
My pleasure.
Patricia Fernandez-Kelly is senior lecturer in sociology at Princeton University. Her new book is The Hero's Fight, African Americans in West Baltimore and the Shadow of the State. We've got more information on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us on 88.1.